School Board, Mr. Hodge.
If it pleases the court, counsel. This case raises a familiar Title VII issue of whether or not there was enough evidence or pretext presented by the plaintiff to warrant a trial. What's different about this case is we're dealing with a Chicago school board, not a, quote, ordinary, unquote, employer. This is an employer that has an entire superstructure, an elaborate superstructure of rules and procedures that govern the imposition of suspension and discipline and discharge in cases of this sort. And the district court, even though we vigorously proposed that we look at this structure and make a determination or agree with us that the board was totally unable to justify this action, this discharge in this case, based on its own rules.
Have you brought a suit for wrongful termination?
No, Judge, this is a case.
Why not?
Because the 2-year time period was over by the time the EEOC finished considering the case. This is unfortunately a rather common procedure. This is a case.
Well, why is that common? You can bring a suit for a breach of contract without waiting for the EEOC to act.
The plaintiff was unrepresented until she filed her pro se action in the district court, so there's no counsel at that point. The issue here, though, Judge, is that the Board of Education has not been able to justify under its own rules.
I know, but
rules,
that sounds as if you're turning a wrongful termination suit into a Title VII suit.
No, we're trying to turn it into a Reeves case, Judge, and I think we're entitled to do that because under Reeves, if a lawyer comes in and says, yes,
well, no, but what you're saying is any time there's evidence of wrongful termination, you get to the jury on Title VII.
Not necessarily.
But, of course, these employers make mistakes or they may be, you know, animated by malicious feelings or something that don't have anything to do with discrimination. So what do you have here that suggests an actual dishonesty in terms of...
Well, we have a course of fumbling attempts to try to justify this action by pointing to interpretations of its own rules, and then at the very end of the process, bringing in affidavits which tend to impeach the board's own written rules, saying, "Oh, you know, we agree that this Lee is an administrator, but oh, by the way, we have a distinction between school-based administrators."
What's the evidence that is it Gam? Is that her name?
That's correct.
What is the evidence that she knew that she was violating the rules of her employer?
She didn't know. All we know is that the decision, all this happened in a period of about 2 hours on a Monday, Judge. We know that it was a conversation between Gam and Miss Lee about 9 o'clock in the morning and 11:45 a.m. the same day.
Right, Gam got angry and fired her.
Right.
Now, where's the indication of discrimination?
There's an indication of discrimination because the decision was made in haste.
Yes, I know, but the made in haste is entirely consistent with her being angry.
She was replaced, Ms. Lee was replaced by somebody not in a protected class. She went from being a person.
Well, that's another element of your prima facie case, but you mm-hmm. have to show pretext, don't you?
And we do, but we don't have to show
it. But the pretext, all you have is possible mistake.
We have mistake after mistake after mistake, Judge. We have not only mistaken perceptions of what the facts were in the situation, which is permitted under Kariotis, there's no problem with that, but we have a consistent effort by the board. I mean, when it comes time to justify the decision, the board says, well, oh, by the way, this is the reason over here. Oh, and no, we're sorry, that's not quite correct. It's over here. This is what's correct. And, oh, by the way, finally, we've come up with a rule which is not even on our written guidelines, even though we have reams and reams of guidelines and procedures which cover all these situations. And it's just there's evidence here of dissembling, at least not as enough to raise a requirement on the board to come before a fact finder and justify this decision. I don't think it's possible as a matter of law if the board's attempt to justify its decision is brought in as relevant to the inquiry of pretext.
You say, for example, in your reply brief, page 6,
Mm-hmm.
It appears the Reform Board didn't and doesn't understand its own written personnel policies.
That's what we were alleging here.
If that's true, that doesn't have anything to do with discrimination. That actually suggests a non-discriminatory reason for what happens.
As what Reeves says, Judge, is if an employer offers a reason, then there has to be some evidence.
You've given the reason. You say they don't know that. Look, if they wanted to discriminate, okay, they know they're acting against the rules, but they want to discriminate. You say they don't know what their own rules are, so they advised Gam, and they gave her mistaken advice because they don't understand their own policies.
Isn't that to extend Cariotis to a logical absurdity, though, Judge? I mean, you can have.
You're the one who says they don't understand their own policies. I didn't say that.
I'm just responding to your argument, Your Honor.
They don't understand their written policies. Is that your view?
I'm saying they don't understand their written policies well enough to be able to justify or prove that this individual is an at-will employee. They say it's this reason, it's that reason, they all turned out to be without basis. And if that's the case, Judge, that's exactly the kind of situation that Reeves addresses. Reeves says if the employer offers a reason and it turns out to be false or without any basis, then the inference can be drawn that there's something else going on here. At least something that could tell the plaintiff in a matter of trial.
Is it discriminating or the members of the board in your
It's the members of the board in the situation, Judge.
So
the GAM is
there. She's just angry, but they're the ones who want
That's
to get
right.
rid of
That's
the black
words, this is not a Shaker situation where you have somebody pumping bad information to GAM, who's GAM's participation in this whole thing is very, very brief. It's basically 2 days. It's the 14th and the 17th, and bang, it's over with. And what's happening here is the board, she calls up somebody in HR, and HR says, oh, yeah. Who are the members of this board? This is the Chicago School Reform Board, which is... had different members back then, but this is this is a result of the 95 changes that happened on the school board. But this is a Reeves situation, Judge.
Are these elected people?
I'm sorry?
These elected?
No, they're appointed people.
By whom?
By the mayor.
They all like?
No. But the board is here. You have a situation. You have a decision.
Why would the board care? What was Lee's position?
Head of student health.
So you think the board preferred to have a white person in that position? Is that your view?
Ultimately, Judge, I don't think it was an animus of. I think it's enough for a trial in this case, Judge. I think what we're trying to guard against here is irrational behavior. Irrational behavior that may or may not be discriminatory.
You're charging them with racial discrimination, but you don't even have an opinion on whether they engaged in discrimination?
I do have an opinion. Under Reeves, I said the jury could very easily find this is racial discrimination in this case, Judge.
But you have no idea whether it was.
I'm sorry?
You have no idea whether it was.
I know have an idea, yes. I have an idea that they had an opportunity right there to get rid of an employee who was performing up to standards. That they found something, a reason, an opportunity to get rid of her, and they decided to take the action. This all happened in a period of 3 or 4 days. It all happened to a person that was performing adequately and just gotten a very high performance review.
Replaced her was what, a pet of the board or something like
this
that?
This person was a pet of, or under our theory, was a one of the GAM's inner circle, one of the people GAM favored over my client. Now, it could have been for personal reasons.
I'm sorry,
it could have been because of anger.
A member of an inner circle, what?
Somebody that GAM
preferred. The replacement was a member of an inner circle?
It was somebody that GAM preferred. Over the place.
Well, no, but it's not GAM. It's the board, you say, is the discriminator.
Ultimately, yes, it is.
So this replacement, is this someone close to members of the board?
I have no idea. But all I'm saying, Judge, is that they have a situation here which is, if irrationality is not, it would be avoided in this case, and that's what Shaker says. The inability of the board to justify what it did turns probably wrong-headed and a stupid decision into one that is probably discriminatory. And that's what we're saying here as a matter of law, that the district court was wrong for the district court not to consider the evidence we offered about the ability of the board to justify what was going on and what its actions were in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hodge. Mr. Sogel?
please, Court.
Counsel. I think the district court in this case zeroed in on the fatal deficiencies in the plaintiff's case here. There was clearly no evidence of racial animus in this case, and there was absolutely no evidence to dispute Ms. Gamm's honest belief that the plaintiff was an at-will employee. I think her own behavior raises the inference that she even believed that she was an at-will employee. I think we can look at several facts to substantiate that. One, she never contested her termination. Supposedly this letter was sent to her, she was told she was terminated. There was absolutely no evidence brought by the plaintiff that she came down to the Human Resources Department, came to the board, came to Ms. Gamm and said, you can't terminate me, I need some kind of disciplinary hearing, I need some kind of hearing, I need to be suspended first, progressive discipline says this and this and this. Secondly, in her EOC complaint, she never raises the issue that, well, I was wrongfully terminated, that I was entitled to all these other things, and because of my race, I wasn't granted all these, I wasn't afforded all these rights. Thirdly, in her original complaint, pro se complaint, in which it was a narrative to some extent, she never mentions that she was wrongfully terminated. And then again, in the amended complaint, which her counsel drafted, was assisted in, she never mentioned that she was wrongfully terminated or terminated without due process because of her race. Your Honor, if in fact every hasty decision that a employer makes, or every decision, and I would say in this case it was warranted by a kind of a one-upsmanship type thing in this situation. Ms. Gamm had sent on Saturday a notice to Ms. Lee telling her to be in her office at 9 o'clock in the morning. Ms. Lee, who was the director of student health services, responsible for a great deal of the allocating of nurses to various schools, had a great deal of responsibility. I think Ms. Gamm, although it's not definitely clear, was testing her to see exactly what was her level of responsibility to the board. She calls up at around 9 o'clock, the time that she's supposed to be in Ms. Gamm's office, and tells Ms. Gamm that she can't come in because she's ill. Ms. Gamm, I think, believed, honestly, that explanation was dubious, because the explanation, and there was an exchange between the two, and I think it was a harsh exchange between the two. It turned out that she said she had high blood pressure or something that would not afford her, and I don't think that Ms. Gamm believed that was a good enough, a legitimate excuse for somebody in her position to not come into the office to meet with her ultimate supervisor. I think the refusal to provide the doctor's information and the doctor's phone number to Ms. Gamm was Ms. Lee questioning her authority. And I think that in turn, Ms. Gamm, in one-upsmanship, said, well, you know, if she's going to question my authority, I'm going to see how far I can go with her, and contacted Human Resources and sought her termination. And then, based upon the information she received, immediately terminated plaintiff, Ms. Lee. I don't think that there's any, I know that there's no evidence in the record that the board had any involvement in the plaintiff's termination. It was my understanding that the plaintiff was trying to get at the board through the liability, or through the act of a supervisor, through that type of liability. There was never any indication that anybody other than Ms. Gamm had any involvement in plaintiff's termination. For these reasons, I ask that you affirm the district court's findings. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sago. Mr. Hodge, how much time does he have? Just 1 minute.
So if there wasn't any insubordination, we put that in the brief. I mean, the Gamm asked for the information about the doctor. Even if my client had given the information, which she didn't have to do under the law, the EEOC is pretty clear about that, the doctor would never have talked to Ms. Gamm. I mean, that the doctor was without a medical authorization.
Your position is that she was not an at-will employee, is that correct?
That's correct. She said not an at-will employee.
Why didn't you bring a Roth-type suit in which you argue that they denied her, they deprived her of property in her job without due process of law?
Because, as we explained in the footnote, 2 years have passed by the time I got on the case. For the statute of limitations in those cases is 2 years.
Well, what's the statute of limitations for Title VII?
at 90 days from the time the right to sue letter comes, and that's what this case was filed under Title VII. The EEOC took until 2001 to dispose of the case that had occurred in 1997. There was an investigation.
Well, I see. So no matter how much time has elapsed from the act of discrimination, you can still sue within 90 days?
If you once you get a right to sue letter, yes. It's told, that's told, but 1981 is not told, and other
right.
Violations.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much to both counsel. Next.